if you want to be serious about this, you have to, you know, develop a plan, develop a schedule, and put yourself out there.
Hey, you're listening to the Creative Pep Talk podcast. Creative Pep Talk exists to help you thrive in your creative career. I'm your host, Andy J. Pizza. You can stay up to date with Creative Pep Talk and my creative work by following me on Instagram at Andy J. Pizza. Let's jump into today's episode. I really needed to rehaul my website. I was talking to some web people, looking around, and I got intrigued by Squarespace's new Fluid Engine, partially because it just sounds cool, but also because it allows you to drag and resize and layer up anything you can imagine. I dove in, rebuilt my site. It's the most me site that I've ever had. I just absolutely love it. Launched it. Got such a great response. Some industry illustration and designy peers even reached out and was like, hey, who coded this thing, man? I'm like, y'all, I did it by myself. No coding with Squarespace's new Fluid Engine. I told him, like, you should go check it out. You're going to be surprised with what you can do. And I built this thing before Squarespace reached out to sponsor the show. So I was like, boom, easy peasy. I was going to tell you about this new site. Anyway, go check it out, AndyJPizza.com, if you want to see what I did with it. If you want to try it yourself, make a site that's totally you, where you can build a portfolio, sell content and courses and all kinds of other stuff, head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain with promo code PEPTALK, all one word, all uppercase. This episode is supported by In The Making, an original podcast brought to you by Adobe Express, the all-in-one content creation app included in your Creative Cloud membership. If you are trying to boost the YouTube, TikTok, Reels content side of what you're doing, one episode of In The Making that I think will be super useful to you is their episode with John Yushai. I think John's method for including his audience in the process is really inspiring. And if you want to hear about that and more about leveling up your game in the creator economy, just search In The Making in your podcast player to listen. Many thanks to In The Making and Adobe Express for their support. So I think this is going to be one of your favorite episodes, one of your favorite interviews, even if you're not familiar with Daniel Fishel and even if you're not an illustrator. And I'm going to get to that in a second, but something real quick that I want to just say. First of all, I got some pens and patches ordered through thangmfg.co. That's the new project of These Are Things. They will help you turn your pen and patch ideas into reality. If you wanted to make an enamel pen and a patch design into reality, but you're overwhelmed with all that, go check them out. They did a phenomenal job, and I'm super pleased with the stuff that they made with me. So go check them out. And then the last thing I want to say is that I'm doing a little survey for you CPT listeners. I just want to hear more about who you are and what you're thinking about the podcast. If you go to creativepeptalk.com/2017survey, you can fill all that out and help me out with making the show even better for you guys. I care about you guys, and I want this to be the best show for you. So I want to know what you're struggling with. I want to know what you want to hear. I want to know what you like and who you want me to interview. So go fill that out. Love to hear from you. Okay, so Daniel Fishel, that's who we've got on today's episode. Daniel's been a friend of mine for years now, I guess, and I think we have a really, really similar heart to share what's working in our careers with others because we care about other people succeeding, and we know how hard it is, and he's just been a kindred spirit in that way. Daniel is a phenomenal illustrator, and he's got the accolades to prove it. This guy has worked with clients like the New York Times and the Washington Post. He has an MFA from the acclaimed SVA illustration program. This dude is one of the 30 under 30 in art and style from Forbes magazine. These are serious things, okay? And Daniel's top-notch in every way, but beyond that, beyond his just accolades as an illustrator, This is a good dude with a good heart and a lot of know-how. He's put in the time and the sweat equity to get where he is today. And he learned a lot along the way. And I know all of these things are going to help you on your journey. Real quick, I just want to say thank you, Daniel, for spending time talking with me through all this stuff for the listeners. Dude, you are a good dude, and I really, really appreciate all that you do. Your work is phenomenal. Thanks for being on the show. All right, here we go. You should be warned. There are some topics and such that may not be appropriate for children. So be aware. So, all right. I am super thrilled to have you on the show. You've been on two episodes already, just in kind of small ways, but I have been a big fan of your work for, I don't know how long, probably 5 or 6 years. And I've also followed your blogs and the things you've written about creativity and illustration. And I'm just super happy to have you on the show.
Yeah, same. Like, I'm so jazzed. I've been following you since the beginning. So yeah. I feel like a fan is finally getting their moment to be on here to kind of speak my truths, speak my realness,
That's awesome, man. So let's kick it off. I just want to kind of get caught up with what is exciting about your practice right now. Like, what are the things that are really doing it for you? They're exciting you, they're engaging you. What are the things you're thinking about?
Well, in the last couple of months, on top of freelancing as an illustrator, I've been working for a website as a staff illustrator called Thrillist. So what's been happening is like every week I'm given articles to illustrate, and I'm always illustrating something new and different. So whether it's drawing literally a bunch of snacks for a big write-off on like the top 100 snacks, or doing a story that's as simple as how to find a new roommate in New York City. Like, because, other than Craigslist, what is there? Or like putting on Facebook, like who, or like doing more like investigative things. Like, we ran a story on, New York City sex clubs. And like, what does that look like? What does that mean?
Yeah.
So it was like a lot of like weird, cool things that have been really cool, that I've been really into and looking forward to this year,
Yeah. And so, what has been cool? Because I know that like, for lots of creative people, there's an ebb and flow of, sometimes you're full-time freelance, sometimes you're in-house working on something, sometimes you're on a longer term project. What have been the good things that have come from being, working in-house somewhere?
Just working in house, well, the big difference is that I have to actually go to an office and work there. And before that, for like the last 8 years, I've been working from home. And so like actually having someone to talk to other than my cat has been very, very helpful in terms of like actually not actually going to like illustration parties, like, at the end of each year. And trying to remember like how to actually talk to another person.
Dude, isn't this a real thing though? Like,
it's too real.
It's messed up. I went to a coffee meeting today, and it'd been a little bit too long until I had that much human attention directed at me in my face. And I was just like acting like the weirdest person. I was just like, I don't remember how to have a conversation. Like, I can't, where are you supposed to look? How long are you supposed to look them in the eye? Like, I was getting everyone. And, like, as soon as you're like a little bit more, out there, all of that goes away pretty quickly, but it's such a real thing.
Yeah. It's so weird. And also like, I have a bunch of friends who actually rent studio spaces in like Greenpoint and Gowanus and all that. And I could never really afford to have that extra space, let alone like having like rent in New York City,
Dude, so the thing for me is like, even when I can afford that, I always just have this freelancer mentality of like, why aren't you saving that money? Like, that's like overhead that you don't have to have. And a part of that, I think, is me being an introvert. So I don't need that cooperative, you know, whatever to exist. But yeah. So do you feel like you're personally in a more healthy place by having to interact with people all the time?
I think so. And that was something that I kind of looked at last year when I was like 29. I was about to turn 30 at the end of the year. And I'm like, what are some things in my life that I can do to improve like my overall like
happiness,
physical, mental health and all that.
Yeah.
And, you know, part of it was like, I need to find some kind of way to have steady income. So the two different routes that I can go is find a staff illustrator job or find a like a full-time teaching position with like a full tenure track. Mm-hmm. And a staff illustrator job kind of popped up, and I knew that my friend Jason was like working at Thrillist, so that was like a really nice kind of in to all that. But also like the fact that like so many of my friends that I know have like in-house jobs, either full-time or part-time already.
Yeah.
So I was just really like fortunate and kind of lucky to kind of come across that.
Yeah.
So that, and also like the fact that like,
to be able to do illustration in house.
Yeah. And like, it's really great because, like this job basically pays all my bills.
Yeah. That's
and so amazing. All the freelance money that I make is so that like, if I want, like basically my biggest ambition in life is that I want to get to a point where I can go to a restaurant and not have my main meal in the appetizer menu, but like also order like a main meal and have dessert like at the same time. Like that's like my biggest goal in life.
Maybe your biggest goal would be to transcend the search results of Danielle Fishel.
I mean, that would be great to do that, but
you're
sometimes
always compete with Topanga.
I'm always going to compete with her. Like the first year and a half of my career was basically just getting emails from people saying, hey, so I really liked you in Boy Meets World and all that. And it's so great that you're also doing this other creative pursuit. And I'm like, I am not that person.
That would have been amazing career move to document, though, if she had gone from Boy Meets World to a full-time illustration career.
I would have been like, girl, like you are stepping on me right now. Like, what are you doing?
That's hilarious. But
she did a book signing on the Upper East Side, I want to say, in Manhattan, and I actually went. And I bought her book just so she could sign it and so that I could have a photo of me and her posing. And I posted it on Instagram.
Awesome.
I
don't know if I think I
had like over 200 like people liking that photo, which is like the most anyone's liked any photo. I'm like not even my illustrations get that much likes.
That is so funny.
I'm like happy if I break 100, but that got like over 200 likes, and I was just like, man, this is great.
When I was a young teen, she must have been like one of my first crushes. I hate that we've like segued into making this conversation.
we're having boys' night right now. it's like her and Alex Mack. You were like the two people that everyone had a crush on in the 90s.
Totally, yeah. So back to paying your bills. One of the things, so early on especially for me, like paying my bills, I think one of the things that's weird about an illustration career is that you're not like, you know, getting this job at Thrillist is a unique opportunity. There aren't tons of jobs for illustrators. So you build this portfolio, you put all your eggs in this basket, and then you're kind of in trouble in some ways in terms of making money. And luckily I had like a design background, but my early years, in the first couple of years, there was just tons of struggling, and paying bills was a massive issue for me. And I wonder if, how having that cushion and that security has affected your creative work.
Well, I want to note and say that there are actually a lot more in-house jobs available. It's just the majority of them are not like my job where I'm basically doing editorial illustration, which is what I started out. But they're mostly in like animation where you're doing storyboards, you're doing background coloring and all that. So there's a lot more. But the thing is like, I don't know if you want to move to Burbank, California or not. That's the other thing. But anyway, back to kind of creativity. I think that in part because the work that I do at Thrillist is more narrative and less conceptual versus the work that I do for other freelance clients and also for myself, for my gallery work and all that is a little more conceptual. It's a little more weird in a way. It's like I'm able to go and, you know, Monday through Friday from 10 to 7, basically do very narrative work. And, you know, and then that flexes like one kind of part of my brain. And then I go and flex my other kind of brain, you know, in the mornings and the evenings during the week and even on the weekends. Yeah. So I can, you know, it's, if anything, it's like made me not be bored because, you know, in what, you know, some hours of the day I'm doing narrative work and other days I'm doing conceptual work. So it's really fun.
Do you feel like that cushion has allowed you to step back and be a little bit more, I don't know, strategic in the way that you see the rest of your career unfolding rather than like early on? One of the things that was a big issue for me was like, in those first couple of years where I'm like struggling to pay bills, it's really affecting my decision-making in terms of how I develop my practice because everything's determined by, is this going to make me money next month? Rather than, you know, where do I really want to take this career? Do you feel like that cushion has created a safer space to think more long-term or more creatively?
It's definitely taken me out of survival feast and famine mode for sure.
Yes.
And also it's made me less annoying to clients that are like a week or two late.
Yeah.
When I'm like, so like instead of me being like, you know, if they paid me like right now, I could literally pay my gas bill or like whatever, you know.
Yeah.
To now I'm just like more chill about that. And I've like changed my strategy, my promotional strategy a bit so that, and also the fact of the matter is too, is that I'm able to now buy more expensive promotional like pieces so to actually.
Go ahead. What were you saying?
Oh yeah. Like to send out. So like for years, I just kind of stuck to like 4x6 postcards and sending out emails.
Yeah.
And now like I'm sending less emails out, but now I am like sending out folded postcards with like stickers in it and pins, like all that, which is like, you know, costs a lot more, you know. Sending out like 200 postcards is like $100 or whatever. Whereas like these folded cards and with the stamps and everything was like over $1,000, which is like in a year ago, I wouldn't have considered like ever doing that. Like it would have like, cause it's like by the time I would have been able to like buy each piece, like individually build toward that, I would have been like, oh, the work is like already old and past that. Like I need to not send this out.
Yep.
You know? So.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, I eventually had to take on some like contractual retainer design clients, and that ended up giving me a cushion to where I wasn't in scrambling mode. And I feel like early on, so many creative people are tempted to take shortcuts that end up becoming long cuts because you can't invest in your career. You can't do those kinds of things.
Yeah, but it also, I think too, that those are also very important to take in the very, very early aughts because like especially if you're like 22 coming out of college and you know you have some design chops and all that, it's good to do that because sometimes not every like like out of a class of 50 coming out of a illustration program, like maybe like two or three are like definitely solid enough to like really go hard and do it. Yeah. While like the majority of like everyone else, maybe they're good, but like they need another like 2-3 years of like making good work and, you know, saying what they want to say and really figuring it out before they actually kind of get to that moment. And the unfortunate thing is that like some people quit, you know, they just stop because it's too hard. And some people, they continue on, you know, and they kind of make it. But I think, you know, those are all kind of important things that are kind of part of the journey of being a creative person.
Yeah.
You know?
I wanted to talk to you about, we kind of discussed this idea of going through kind of the top five things that have had a massive impact on your career, the things that you have done intentionally or learned along the way that have had a big impact on your career. What would be the first thing on that list?
Oh, for sure. We already kind of started to touch upon it, but the first thing would definitely be grit.
Grit.
You know, when I graduated from, you know, the University of the Arts, it was around 2009. It was the year after the big economic collapse.
I graduated the exact same time, so I totally know what you're talking about.
You know, so, and our teachers were like, look, man, like, if you want to be serious about this, you have to, you know, develop a plan, develop a schedule, and put yourself out there. And, you know, and I was like, all right. So, you know, what I did was I did the research, and I went into talks, and like there was an artist talk at the Society of Illustrators by an illustrator. They basically, I'm not going to say who that is, but he's kind of a dick. But right. Anyway, he did have some really good advice. Yeah. And his advice was basically, there's no real silver bullet to promotion. It's, you have to do everything.
Dude, that, you know, I love that advice. And I've just started telling that to people. Like, you need to quit thinking that there's some magic marketing tool that's going to solve all of your wildest marketing dreams.
Totally. Yeah. And, but the thing is too, is that you should only do the things that you feel comfortable with too.
Yeah, right.
So for instance, I literally do everything from, you know, I send out postcards in a very scheduled way throughout the year. I send out, you know, emails, both email blasts and personalized emails individually. Mm-hmm. I send letters out with notes after I, you know, finish assignments with people that I really enjoy at the end of the year.
Can I just pause you real quick and ask you, within emails and postcards and direct marketing, that's something that I haven't had tons of success with. And I think we're in different markets and we've, you know, had different, you know, things that we've tried in whatever, but I get these questions about direct marketing all the time. And I'm wondering, what are the things that you have learned over the years that are effective not in terms of just like the illustration world per se, but just more just like when you're approaching someone you want to work with directly, what are the things that you've learned that have really helped you in that pursuit?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, you need to realize that the difference between email promotion and direct, like physical promotion, is that a physical promotion is something that you want to send to someone that you hope that they kind of see and hold on to. Mm-hmm. So that's, I see that as like the long game.
Right.
That you're making something that's tangible that they want to keep. Mm-hmm. An email is just a quick reminder that you exist.
Yeah.
And occasionally you will get an email back from them saying, oh, we were just looking for someone just now. Mm-hmm. And you kind of like hit it where like lightning strikes at the right time, or maybe later in the week they remember the email and they kind of look back at it and they're like, we were just thinking about you. So there's a much more quicker response with emails that I've had and a lot of people have. Yeah. But I've also had people email me to do an assignment. And they're like, I've had this postcard that I've loved. for 2 years that you sent me, and I want to finally hire you for the right job.
Yep.
And that's so satisfying in the same way.
And I think these two points are massive, because so many people think, if I can just figure out the exact right way to directly approach the clients I want to work with, then instantly everything will change. But the two things you're saying that are just essential when thinking about marketing are, one, long game. You're thinking over the long haul, yep. If I invest in these areas, at some point there will be some kind of payoff. And then also,
right,
not like, hey, I'm selling myself to you, please do, you know, please hire me, but more just like, hey, remember me, just be aware,
yeah,
I'm still doing stuff, and just reminding people you exist. The long game and reminding you people you exist is like the whole game with that. But so many people get caught up in like sales, or like, you know,
right,
I need to change my life right now, I'm going to send 100 emails, and then they get discouraged because it's not going to change your life like that.
Also, I would say, don't send 100 emails, send 500 emails, but that's just me.
Yes, yeah.
But anyway.
Dude, I love that. And that's one of the things that you and I are so much on the same page about, is that, you know, I feel like you and I are totally legit illustrators. We've worked really hard at our craft, but more than anything, we may not be the freakish, crazy, you know, lottery winners in the creative world, but we have put in the time and effort, the blood, sweat, and tears to take things into our own hands. So that's
right,
awesome.
Totally.
Yeah.
Also, like, you know, to kind of end my point too, on the topic of grit, you know, whether you send out a handwritten letter after the job or at the very end of the year, it's important to send a letter, like a handwritten letter, to the people that you worked with, whether it's for a $250 alternative weekly spot illustration, or, you know, the $3,000 you just got for, like, you know, a cover assignment, like, or, you know, a book cover, or how much ever for the advertising campaign. I feel like it's very important to, or even if it's a client that you worked with last year but didn't work with this year, to, like, actually write them a handwritten letter, and being very genuine and being like, it was really great working with you, and I hope to work with you next year, or however, you know, you want to write the letter, like, it, you know, because I've definitely had people hire me like a few weeks to a month later being like, it's really great that you wrote me this letter because you're actually like a real person and like with like real genuine feelings about this. And like, now I want to like hire you again, even more.
You can never underestimate the power of making a real connection, especially even that person that gave you that tiny little job. The fact of the matter is their career isn't over. And in 5 years, they're going to be working on bigger jobs. And if you've created a good relationship with that person, you get to come along for the ride and continue working with somebody. Like, there are people that I've worked with for years and years as they've moved around, as well as how I've changed, you know?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Which brings me to my next point. As much as you may have a lot of grit and you want to put yourself out there and you're making new work and you're being an animal about it, patience is so important.
Yeah,
patience.
Totally.
You know, it's because I've definitely had points where you know, let me be real, I look at the New York Times op-ed page every single day.
Yeah.
And it's not only because I'm a very opinionated person, it's because I want to be on that goddamn page.
Yeah.
Like you know,
I've
worked with other sections of that website, but I've never done an op-ed. And, you know, one of these days I feel like, you know, an art director is going to leave there and a new art director is going to come in and they're going to favor someone with my way of storytelling.
Yep.
And that's going to be the day that I'm going to finally do my first op-ed. But, but this is also is reflective of like other things too. It's like, I've wanted to do things for other magazines, newspapers, and publications or whatever. But like sometimes it's taken me years to actually achieve that. Even at the beginning of my creative practice, like You know, the first 2 years out of undergrad, I was promoting myself as an illustrator while in graduate school, which, you know, let's be honest, this is like kind of a cop out in a sense of me, because in a sense, I was in school and I was promoting myself and I was still working out a lot of the issues and I was getting feedback from a studio of people then. Yeah. And then I was like all alone with my cat for the years following. But like in that time, I was in this like weird little bubble where I was able to promote myself and all that. But not everyone has that luxury.
Right.
But, you know, even if I didn't, I would still be pushing myself out there. I'd probably have a retail job or something to kind of like keep myself afloat in some kind of way if I didn't do that until I had come to that point like 2 years after I started promoting myself, growing as an illustrator and everything to kind of get to that point.
Why
so,
do you think patience is important though? Like why is, you know, and I, you know, I have my own ideas of why I think it is, but I'm curious to know,
well,
like, what do you think it does for you if you can have some patience?
It's not so much about, well, let me put it in this way. So if you have a lot of grit, what can happen is the opposite. You look like you're impatient. So for instance, I'm
desperate or whatever.
Yeah. So like talking, so the great thing about living in New York, which is another privilege of mine that not many people have, is I'm able to become friends with art directors and talk to them, you know, talk shop and all that. And one thing that they would, when I'd be talking to one and they're like, oh, today I've had this guy email me and he's emailed me like every 2 weeks for the last like 2 months. And two, I don't know if he has my email on like multiple email lists, but he's emailed me twice or three times in the same day, that same exact email.
Yes.
So like, that's the other problem too, is that if you don't keep track of yourself and understanding that, you know, you got to have things on a schedule and not be too overly ambitious about sharing what you do, in some ways a promotion, that can be actually hurtful to not only your career, but also your own motivation of being like, what? I've been emailing people every time, like every 2 weeks. Like, why isn't everything happening? It's because, you're being annoying.
And
like,
you're gonna no one burn out.
That too. Like, I can just imagine like someone who just keeps doing it and they just kind of lose the spirit a little bit.
Yes. And one of the things that I've found that I try to tell people that are just getting started is like, the first year you're going to put in all this time and energy and you're going to get two clients and you're going to be like, yes, two clients. The next year you're going to get two clients. But the year after that, you're going to get three because one of them is going to return. And then the year after that, you know, and after 8 years, it starts to compound with interest. And if you have the patience to make it that far, all of a sudden you have such a weird web of an ecosystem of clients that are coming in. And it only happens through time. You know, there's no other, you know, part of the formula. You have to just put in the time and slowly but surely make progress. And if you do, it will eventually compound into a sustainable thing.
Right. So, you know, and with that, you know, talking about energy and all that comes up to the idea of like equanimity, you know, when I lived in Philadelphia, and I was, you know, studying illustration at the University of the Arts, I sat and I like hung out with these dudes who are part of like this, like American Buddhism movement called Dharma Punks, which was like kind of formed by like Noah Levine out in California. He wrote like a great book, a memoir called, Dharma Punks. Which talks about him like growing up in like 1970s and 80s punk like Los Angeles, California, doing drugs and like having sex with all these people, and then like eventually like finding Buddhism as like a new way and putting it through like a very punk rock lens. And then he ended up writing a really great book called Against the Stream, which is like a very practical way to write about Buddhism in a very modern sense, so that, you know, you can choose to be celibate or not, and know that if you don't be celibate, like, these are the issues run across to try to find like some kind of like balance within your life. So
that's cool.
Within that is like this teaching about like thinking about equanimity in the way of like knowing that problems are going to happen within your life and other people's life, and like talking with them, and the understanding to let go of the fact that you can't solve everyone's problems, and you have to be okay with that. Mm-hmm. Or you can't solve all of your problems, and sometimes you just have to let go of that. Like, for instance, I know that a problem that I'm, since we talked about the New York Times op-ed, I know that there might be come a point when I'm 70 years old and I'm just going to have to let go of the fact that maybe the op-eds were going to hire me.
Damn it. So, come on, people.
You know, so I have to be okay with the fact that that might be a thing. Yeah. Another issue is that unlike, just like you, I put myself out there on Twitter and on the internet in different capacities. And I do talks at schools and everything. Mm-hmm. And part of that is what I do is I talk to students and I give them advice.
Yep.
They don't follow up on my advice and they don't become the illustrators that I see that they can be.
Yeah.
And when they don't, it's heartbreaking in the fact that I have to actually try to find a way to let go of that energy of like, how hurtful I feel, because I feel like, did I not say the right thing to like make it click in them?
Yeah. And I get so obsessed with that.
Yeah. So that's something that I've had to actually overcome in a way. And once I overcame that, it became a lot easier to feel great when someone actually takes my advice and like runs with it. And also it made me be able to be okay with the fact that maybe they don't, and that is even reflective of my own life, that it can be applied as well. It's such a great concept and idea.
In terms of like remaining calm throughout the storm, do you feel like you're better at riding the kind of roller coaster of freelance and illustration and creativity, just in terms of bidding for jobs or trying to get that particular job or a job falling through or all of that stuff of, I think every type of creative, whether you're an actor, a writer, whoever you are, you're going to experience a lot of that up and down. Like you're going to get it, but then you don't get it. And then, do you feel like you're better at writing that? And B, maybe there are some things that have helped you do that. And see maybe why that is good or helpful. Any of that you can just run with.
Yeah, I think that's a lot to kind of take in. But
I know, I'm sorry. I had so many things that I wanted to download, but I wanted to hit it from several angles because for me that's such a massive thing and it's such a big part of this whole career. It's so up and down. It's so all over the place. And I just wonder. You can start with like, are you better at dealing with it?
I think that the idea of just being okay with the fact that there's enough work to kind of go around for the most part. And
that's such an important thing to try to embrace. I totally agree. Oh,
totally. And like, as long as you kind of keep that in mind and whether or not you get that assignment or that project that you're bidding for or whatever, like, I've had two instances where I was up for like a really big job that would have like paid for the rest of the year.
I've been there tons of times.
I definitely remember being like, okay, what do I need? And I go and I buy like $50 worth of paper and I buy a new paintbrush and all this because I'm like, I'm ready to sit
ready
down
to 3 months job.
And then I'm told that it went to another illustrator and I'm just like, whoa, that's $50 I could have like maybe spent on food at the grocery store. Now what kind of like thing. But over time you just kind of like you find little ways to pull yourself out of that, whether that's through, finding something like going for a run to clear your head or meditation or whatever. Like everyone has their own way to find a way to just kind of clean the slate for the day and kind of like start anew after a setback like that.
I've heard actors, what were you going to say?
Or even like just anything really. But yeah, what do actors do?
I've just heard even actors talking about like when they're on a pilot or they're trying out a new show or whatever, they're like, until it is aired on TV, until that moment, I don't celebrate it. And I think for me,
when you sign a contract,
what's that? Yeah, it's like even after you sign a contract, like you never know, like that project might never see the light of day. Like you might get paid, you know, you might finish the project and they still might cut it. Like, you know, I've been in every situation.
I see it as this. If you sign the contract, all I see is like, hey man, I'm still gonna get a kill fee.
Getting
like,
paid.
That's how I view it, totally, you know. Man.
I do like, think like at some point that's where you grow up and you're like, look, I'm getting paid. It's all fine. It's going to be fine.
And like secretly you might want to be like, oh, I'm going to share this with like a few friends. Yeah. But for the most part, this can't go on Tumblr, you know.
This is a thing that, you know, I think only probably illustrators and people like that have to deal with this. Like, you know, have you ever had to work on a project that you couldn't tell anybody about that actually did go out there?
Yeah, I've had to like sign like three like non-disclosures to work on a project for Moleskine. Oh. And I was able to finally like show what I did like after it like the actual thing went live. And I showed like what my sketches looked like for the project. And I think part of it was just me like overpricing it because I didn't know what I was doing. And also the fact that I was just like, I didn't really understand quite what they wanted.
Yeah.
So the combination of those two, of just not having enough communication with the client to know, like, maybe I shouldn't try to fit like crazy little illustrations in like a part of a packaging and like actually draw the goddamn packaging like of the thing it's I'm gonna have on the thing. You know, so like things like that, that kind of like in hindsight, you're just like, ugh, but you know, at the same time, you just got to let go and be like,
that's right.
I mean, another cool project is going to come up, which anyway, brings me to my next point of empathy. Yes. You know, you and I just talked about like things that are so relatable of like, you just, you know, not getting jobs, all that. And that's such a really good thing to bond with another person and all that. Mm-hmm. So like what happens sometimes too is that I've talked with a couple of illustrators who have moderate success, but they're not like really gunning it. And to actually be in that position where I've had like dry spells and I've had rain a lot of times, I can talk to them on a very like even level. And you know, and with that, you know, you're able to also apply that to your just everyday life, you know. Yes. Oh, like, you know, you got into a car accident. I did too when I was 17, and like, it was like the worst. But we all lived and all walked away from it. And the same thing is like with, you know, your creative practice. Mm. You know, we all have moments where we sit down, we break some bread with some people. You have a drink or whatever your thing is that you want to do. And we can share these experiences, you know, online, in person, at a conference, whatever.
This is one of the reasons that, you know, I meet a lot of creative people or talk to them over the internet that are in their little bunkers, doing their creative work, totally disconnected from face-to-face relationships over creativity. And it's one of the reasons why I'm like, you have to, at whatever cost, get face-to-face with other people in your market, in your niche, that you can be honest with and really connect with, because that, more than anything, not only does it propel your career forward because, you know, just the infinite amount of things that come from that, it will make you more sane as a person.
Yeah, and also it makes you stop being like a business person for a minute and be a person.
Oh my gosh.
You know?
Tell me about it. And so, I suck at that so bad, but you know, going to a conference and having a few beers and just being people with other people that can relate is like so therapeutic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh man.
That's really good, man. Yeah, I think empathy is underrated. I think especially in a world where, you know, this idea of personal brand is proliferated everywhere so that everybody feels like they have to keep up this front, it can feel really lonely and isolating. So I think lending an ear and being honest about your own struggles is a massive, massive thing.
Right, right. And, you know, when I interned for Jessica Hish, she like told me like, when you put yourself on the internet, you should put your like basically like 95% of like your truest self and leave like the freak flag, like from being on the internet, you know, just, you know, like that weird thing that you do, like, just don't tell anyone about it. Yeah. Like let your partner know, let your, some of your close friends know, but
that's good advice. That's really good advice actually. Yeah. Because not just not the hiding part per se, but I think, I do think a lot of people misunderstand people like Jessica Hish, who are big sharers, sometimes think that they're seeing everything, but knowing that, you know, there are certain things that you can just keep for yourself and keep some boundaries.
Yeah. And there's also conversations that she just doesn't want to have on the internet.
Totally.
Too.
Yeah.
Totally. And true. I'm exactly the same way, which like another point too, I had a coworker ask me, are you really that into cats? And I'm like, yeah. I am. I love my cat, and I'm obsessed with cats.
That's hilarious.
And he thought it was like a whole persona that I was putting on. I'm like, no, it's me.
The cat I'm persona.
Right now. Yeah.
Dude, for me, this is some like a kind of a touchy subject for me because I have always been a cat person, but my dad and my brother are severely allergic, so I can't even have one if I want to see them ever again.
Oh, wow. Like, you can't have a cat at your place and then be like, well, you can't visit my home anymore, but I can see you. Or is it like to the fact that like you have to put on new clothes you leave the house?
Everything. Yeah.
Oh, so it's wow.
Like
that's
me or it's like cats or my dad and my brother.
That's such a sad thing.
I know, cats it is sad. I've never had to bond with my people. Anyway, let's get back.
I have one last point. Which is humbleness. Mm. And, you know, which on the internet, one of the problems is, you know, between grit and humbleness is like, as much as you want to share like everything that you're doing, at the same time, you want to also just kind of put it out there and just leave it at that.
Yeah.
You know, one of the big conversations that I have with like one of my best friends, who's an illustrator, is we always find it really funny how people always say they're an award-winning illustrator. It's like
I am an award-winning illustrator. I won the award for number one cutest baby at the fair when I was one.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, I'm in the Guinness Book of World Records.
You are.
Yeah, in 1987, I was put in the Guinness Book of World Records. I don't know if it's on the books or they just scrapped it because they're like, this isn't a real thing anymore. Right. But my mom has a newspaper clipping. Basically, what happened was the IRS sent paperwork saying that I owed money to the government. And my mom's like, he's not even a year old. What are you doing? Like,
so the youngest person to ever owe money to the government.
Yeah, like there's amazing news clips of me being on news shows being like, youngest person ever paid taxes and all that, or whatever, has to owe taxes.
So you can put that in your press column on your website, all these awards and TV things. Yeah,
But I mean, like, I actually, like, a few years ago tried to look for that stuff. So I really can't find it anywhere. I really want to, just so I can. Because it's such a really funny thing to
find out,
like growing up, that at least in the 1987 or 1988 book, like that there's probably my name is probably somewhere in there.
Youngest guy to ever own owe taxes. That's
awesome. Which is like also the lamest thing that you have.
that is not a great record to upset.
No, it's not like I juggled something or whatever. But you know. And the other thing too is like there's an illustrator who I mentioned earlier but won't mention their name.
Yeah.
Who has made controversial magazine covers.
Yeah.
And that illustrator goes and not only like posts the magazine cover and then gets the praise, but then goes and posts like screenshots of television shows that show the cover and make a big deal about it.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's a point to where you can be like, hey man, it's cool that you like showed the cover and then maybe been like made a collage of like these different clips and put it into another post. But I don't need you to have like put it on blast for like the next 3 days of like the same cover and all these shows talking about it.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's like an appropriate cover or not.
Yes.
You know, for the topic that has yet to be talked about on this podcast. Yeah. But like, you know.
Yes, I totally understand that. I think for me, one thing that is dangerous is when the more time you spend online and the less time you spend in the real world, the more your metric for normal gets out of whack. And so you get so entrenched in your own career, your own world, your own, you know, you get so disconnected that you end up making choices on social media that you wouldn't make in real life. And that becomes really detrimental.
Right. And I have a really good example of that as well, where I had to actually check my privilege a little bit on the point. So when Hurricane Sandy hit, I wanted to tell Twitter, basically, hey, if you're thinking about considering me for an illustration job, I still have power in my apartment and I can totally work for you. Which, on one level, is totally appropriate because you want work, but at the same time, there are illustrators living in Manhattan and parts of Brooklyn that don't have power. And I'm being a total dick and being like, hey, you don't want to hire, I don't know, Chris Buzzelli, you can hire me, you know? Like,
that's so funny. Yeah.
And like, you know, and I've talked to Chris like later and he was like, yeah, I had to like go uptown to another illustrator's like apartment to like scan my big oil painting for a job that was due that day. And
that's hilarious.
So, you know, so you have to like also understand on that level. It's not just about like parading around the fact that you got an award or the fact that like something you did got so much press, but also understanding like where you're coming from and like what you're putting out there and how you're saying it and how, and what you're saying, you know? And so it's all like very important on a very even level.
I think that is all of the points that you had that you wanted to bring to the table, right?
Yeah, totally.
So one of the questions I wanted to end on was, what is a thing that you are working through in your career right now, either something you're struggling with or something fresh that you're investigating that is, just on your table right now?
There's two big things right now. Is how can I push the work that I'm doing at Thrillist, that's my staff illustrator job, to push them in ways to kind of take more risks with the work that I'm making, doing more conceptual work? And how can I push my own personal work even further to kind of push the boundaries of what I'm doing? So one thing that I want to do more is make work that has less to do with figurative work and do more conceptual still life kind of things that I feel like would be really cool. Or how can I like mix mosh some things together that I think would be a really cool way? Another thing too that I want to figure out how to do is put more opinion into my work right now. The last couple of years I've been trying to figure out how to inject my identity into the work that I've been doing. You know, when I was an undergrad, you know, we talked about Danielle Fishel for like a minute, and part of the reason why I got that was because I didn't have a photo of myself on my website for like the longest time. And part of that was just my understanding of seeing, like, you know, one or two illustrators that I knew of that were, like, you know, Black or Hispanic or whatever. And they were always given, like, oh, you're Hispanic. You're getting all the Hispanic-based kind of work or whatever. I wanted to kind of position myself so that I could do a broad range of work. And now that I'm kind of coming to a point where I'm more comfortable with my identity as a illustrator and just as a Black person and someone who's biracial, who's both Black and white, and who's both lived in a place of privilege and also has been racially prejudiced against, you know, in different ways, different points in my life, is like, I've been wanting to start a conversation within my work to kind of do that. But the last couple of years, I've been struggling to try to make sure that when I say something in the work, that it actually says it. And is it necessarily, it's like the least offensive to all people that look at it. Like, I don't want to be sterile, but at the same time,
you're
I don't want
someone to, and this is your career.
Yeah. Like, I don't want someone to look at it and be like, oh, is this anti-white? And be like, no, it's talking about things that are very important to me, like as a Black person and also as a white person and all this. And that's something that, you know, isn't overnight. Like, when Richie Pope was in town a couple of months ago for American Illustration Party here in the city, that was something that him and I talked about. And he was saying, like, you know, this is not something that happens overnight. Like, it's something that you have to educate yourself on and learn about and how to talk about and learn the history about things so that when you do and start to go and have these conversations that you're able to have, like, be able to say it in the way that you want to say it. And I started to say that with some of the assignments that I've been assigned, where they're like, oh, like, and I just recently did a piece for Columbia Journalism and Review about how there's a lack of Black journalists in both local news and in new media. Mm-hmm. So I was able to start to implore some of these things that I've been thinking about and ways of showing these kinds of stories in my work, like in that piece and in some other pieces that I did recently. And that's been very cool and something that I want to explore more. But I also know that I don't need to put it out there tomorrow because it's a topical conversation.
Right.
I can actually take my time and actually say the conversation and tell the stories that I want to say in a very personal way when I'm ready to and when I'm ready to flesh it out in a very good, accurate way.
That's awesome. And actually, I think that is such a this is such a fascinating point for me. Because, you know, when you're 18, 20, you have all these illustrators, all these creative people, all these designers, all these artists telling you, you really need to speak your truth. You need to express yourself. You need to make work that is you. And I think at that time, they encourage a lot of people who don't know themselves, don't know what they think, to try to put these ignorant ideas into their work, you know, these half, and I'm not saying that, you know, that there's learning and there's all kinds of good things that can come out of that. But I think the point that you just made that I think is really, really massive and fascinating is putting in the work to really know what you really think. And I think for me, that was massive.
Right. And I think, like, the first roadblock that I hit to make me kind of, like, take a step back was when I was an undergrad and I was making all of these images that were very politically left leaning and very, like, you know, in a very certain way. And basically I would get hit the hardest with criticism of, like, the content that I was drawing and being like, I don't know, like, do you really believe all this? Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And you'd be like, I don't know. Like, you know, or like it's kind of like in the same sense of like having like, you know, that like 19, 20 year old opinion of being like, oh, yeah, it's the system, man. It's, you know, and it's like, what about the system? Like,
like, let's hear your knowledge on these issues. Yeah.
Please say more. And me be like, like, you know, I didn't have an answer. So
and actually, I think, you know, when I was younger, I feel like I had all that pressure to like put your opinions in all of the work. And I think one of the reasons you're not, you don't run to the chance to do that is that you're kind of aware of your insecurities in these opinions because you know how little you know. So you're like, I might identify in this or that way, but part of me is insecure about it because I can't really say that it's totally genuine or authentic or whatever. And going on the journey to really figure that out is a big part of the equation. And it's one of the privileges of being a creative person is getting to do that self-work through all of it.
Right. You know, but at the same time, you also don't want to discourage people from exploring trying to put their pain out because that, because otherwise, you know, I mean,
you're never going to be completely ready.
Yeah. Like, not that there's nothing wrong with drawing cute animals or anything, but like,
I do a lot of apples with faces on them.
Yeah. It's like, so we can, if you want to make hard hitting work, you know, swing a bat, but like I just listed out in my 5 points, know that you might not hit a home run.
Yes.
You might hit it in the left field and you might get to first base. Yep. So just know that too.
That is totally true. All right. So this has been a complete pleasure. And I feel like there are just so much good stuff going on. You brought so many awesome things to the table, and I really appreciate it. I know all the listeners are going to just eat this up. There's so many good things here. Do you have anything that you want to plug or any topic, anything that you, I'm just giving you a platform to say whatever you want to say before we head out.
Nah, man, I just want everyone to eat well, eat your greens.
That's good.
Get a nice chair, sit in when you work. Yeah. And if you're feeling weird or anything, just take a walk, you know, nothing wrong with that.
Golden. Yeah.
It's all that.
Yeah. That's so good. Last thing, and this is the most important thing, is what kind of pizza is your preference?
Margarita pizza all the way.
Maybe
it's because I'm like a hipster living in Brooklyn and Queens, but I'm all about that like wood fire oven that like, you know, New York's known for, you know, the flat pizza. Because it's like the fact that it's flat, you can eat an entire pizza and not feel terrible about yourself.
I love that. I used to be all about deep dish until it just, you know, as I was getting older, it was just like, I want to die. And now it's like, I can get away with eating a decent amount of pizza as long as the dish isn't that deep.
Yeah, totally. And also the fact that if you go and you eat like from a non-chain.
Yes.
Like I used to, when I was like in my early 20s, go and buy a $5 hot and ready from Little Caesars and just swallow the entire thing. But then I would wake up the next day feeling awful. Like
crazy food
and just hangover. Like
eating
Tums like it was candy, and then making the same mistake again that afternoon. You know,
we used to go to the Pizza Hut buffet in college and just take it for everything it was worth. It was a disaster. It was disgusting.
Well, I bet you probably feel a lot cleaner though, because it cleaned you out.
It did. It really did. It was its own kind of cleanse. That's a new kind of cleanse. The Pizza Hut buffet cleanse.
Oh my God! You need to, that's your next book. The Creative Pep Talk presents how to clean your bowel.
That's right.
Most, Pizza Hut in your 30s. Go to the buffet. Eat up all the grease. That's and right,
take care of it. All comes get all the out. Toxins out. It'll bring a whole set of new ones. But anyway,
the risks you take.
Well, hey man, I super super appreciate this. This has been a complete pleasure. So thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks again, and good luck everyone. And just keep yourself out there, and just know that you just take your time. That's going to be fine.
Yeah, that's good. Daniel, man, goodness gracious. Thank you so much for being on the show, for taking time out of your schedule to do this.
I love you, man. I appreciate you. Go follow him on Instagram. It's O_Fischel. This dude was a guest for my MFBA class, my online course, and he rocked it. He shared so many wisdom nuggets in the old creative career sector. My sentences are getting weird. It's 6 o'clock in the morning. All right. Thank you, Daniel. Seriously, man. Guys, go follow him. Go share his work and just show him some love. He's a good dude doing awesome stuff, and we appreciate him. He's very much part of the Creative Pep Talk crew. All right, guys. Thank you guys so much for listening to the show. Thanks for all the feedback. Don't forget to go fill out the listener survey. You can get it at creativepeptalk.com/2017survey. Go check it out. I need your input. Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening. And hey, big shout out to Yoni Wolf and the band Y for our theme music. Thanks to Nate Utesh and the band Metavari for all the other tunes. You can find their stuff at Metavari. No, at soundcloud.com/Metavari. Thanks to everybody. Thanks to you guys. I couldn't appreciate it more. I love you guys. Thanks for being part of the show and the experience. I got a lot of really exciting things planned in the next couple months, and I can't wait to share them all with you. Next week's episode is all about doing the thing that you know you need to do, but you keep procrastinating because you're scared, and how to get through that and out of limbo. So stay tuned on that bad baby. I'm really pumped to share that one with you. All right, guys, until then, do whatever it takes to stay pepped to the max. I scared you there with a new version. I even just feel sacrilegious to not end the right way. Do whatever it takes to stay pepped up.